All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. A quick heads up, the calls are starting to roll in pretty quick. Questions are still a little light, so if you have a question, a comment, a topic, and you want to get through, now would be the time. Press 1 on your phone if you haven't already done that. And if you do that here in the next couple minutes, I will get to you. But it's going to fill up pretty quick today, I think. So we're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. We'll talk about it here on the air. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. We are wrapping up the year, and that means it's time to get a lot of things done, primarily taxes. Tax time is not April. Tax time should have been November or October. But the longer you wait, the more you're going to pay, the more stressful it's going to be, and the bigger the chance that you're going to miss something or make a mistake. So get your taxes taken care of as soon as possible. And what I mean by that is, the year is over. You should have your accounting caught up till December. And that way, as soon as the year ends, especially over the holidays, because you have a little bit of time, you could wrap up your December accounting. By, you know, January 10th, you should have the whole year wrapped up. And all you need to do at that point is wait for your tax documents to come in. They all have to be mailed by January 31st. So you could be in your tax preparer's schedule by the first week or two in February. I promise if you do that, if you are on your tax preparer's schedule in January or February, I mean the first 2 weeks, you will get the best tax return ever, because tax preparers are sitting around in February just waiting for tax returns to start rolling in. And if you are in there in the beginning, they have much more time. It's a lot less stressful. Plus, if you get some surprise that you weren't prepared for, you at least have until April 15th to set some money aside or maybe even contribute to a retirement account. There are a couple things you can do next year, early in the year, that could affect your tax, but not much. So if you get it together now and you see that you've had a really good year, then you can accelerate some spending into this year. If you are going to need tires in the first quarter of next year, maybe you buy them now and have the dealer hold on to them. There's lots of things you could be doing if you get your accounting caught up. Now, we have accounting programs for everybody in every situation, whether you want to do the work, you want us to do all the work, whatever it might be. But let me give you a tip here on how you can get your accounting completely done for last year, and it won't cost you anything at all, and you'll get the best reporting for taxes that you've ever had. You'll get a one-page document that you could email to your tax preparer, and that's all they would need for your business. And the way you do that is our software online. Profit Gauges is our accounting software online. We have a free 30-day trial. And when you sign up for the free trial, you get full access to the program. So if you sit down and get all your paperwork organized, and then you sign up for the 30-day trial, you could literally do all of your accounting in one day. It takes about 20 minutes per month to use our system. So 4 hours or so, 4 or 5 hours, you could have your whole year done. You would have a report for every month, and then you would have your tax report done, and it would only take you a couple days at most, and you have 30 days on the trial. And I hope you don't cancel, but at that point, you could just not go any further, and you would have been able to use the system to do your accounting. And we do that because we know once you do a whole year's worth of accounting in our system, the odds are you're going to stay. You're going to see how powerful and how easy it is. So it's just a little way to tempt you into the program, but it's also a great way for you to get all of your thing at all right now. If you don't want to do the work, you can call us. We'll do all the data entry for you. We can do your tax return. Whatever you need, we've got. But the real message here, whether you use our software, our tax service, or somebody else's, is don't wait. Get this done right now, and you will pay a lot less tax, you'll have a lot less stress, and you'll have good numbers to run your business with. If you are not on our newsletter list, we are starting to put together some really great programs and things we're doing through email, downloads of checklists and reminders and tips and all kinds of things, but you have to be on our list, and it's real simple. Even if you think you're on one of our lists, go sign up again anyway, because we'll never duplicate. So once you're on our list, even if you sign up 6 more times, as long as you use the same email list or same email address, we're not going to send you multiples. So just to make sure you're on our list, go to letstruck.com, the homepage. Down at the bottom left corner, you'll see stay connected, get our newsletters. Just click there. All we want is name and email address. If you want to put in your phone number or text message, you can do that as well. And that's it. And again, if you think, I don't know if I'm on the list or not, fill it out. If you're already on the list, our system knows that. And if you do it right now, you will also get your first email you get from us will be a download for our maintenance checklist, and you'll get that free. So that's a great way to get started on a good maintenance program. We'll be sending out a lot of stuff about taxes and updates, and even if you have a different tax preparer, you want to get our tax updates, because a lot of tax preparers don't stay up on what's going on in the trucking industry. So let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in Nebraska. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Fire tax yesterday there, Kevin.
Absolutely. What's on your mind today?
I've got a friend who has got some tax problems going on. He kind of has a stammer in his speech, so I'm calling for him.
Okay.
He defaulted some student loans, from what I gather, and hasn't filed a return since 2001.
Okay.
What kind of trouble is he getting himself into? How can I stress the importance of him getting this all cleaned up? And I mean, what would even be the first step? You hear these commercials about call the tax help hotline and all that.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Because many of those companies, not all of them, there are some that are legitimate, but a bunch of those, I have just seen some real horror stories. I'll tell you what those programs, what those advertisements are all about. The IRS has a forgiveness program, but it's my experience that if you look through the criteria on that program, the IRS is only going to forgive debt in a couple really extreme cases. So here's the way this works with back taxes. The clock doesn't start ticking on those taxes until the return is actually filed. So no matter how old that is, it hasn't even been identified yet as a tax debt. So the clock doesn't start ticking until you file the return, no matter what year it is. And then once you file the return and the IRS identifies the debt, they have 10 years to collect it. So the one of the ways that the forgiveness program will work is if you're very close to that 10-year limit and the IRS hasn't collected anything yet, they may, you know, accept an offer. The other one is you have no income, no assets, and it doesn't look very likely that you're going to have any income in the next 10 years. Because remember, even if you have nothing right now, the IRS has 10 years to collect this. So they'll sit back and wait. So sometimes you'll see people with disabilities or they're older and coming close to retirement. The IRS might make some sort of a offer and compromise there, but it's pretty rare. So these companies will charge you $2,000 and $3,000, and then just say, "Oh, well, sorry, the IRS didn't accept the offer." So stay away from those. When we come back, I'll tell you how you work through this process, and I've done it several times. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Stuart about some old tax issues he's helping a friend with. So, Stuart, let me give you one of the examples of when I had to do this. Well, first of all, let me ask you a question. During this time since 01, has he been an owner-operator or an employee?
No, I think he's been in and out of the industry from what he was telling me. But it's always been as an employee.
Okay, that's good news. My worst case scenario was I had an owner-operator come to me. He hadn't filed tax returns in 15 years, and he was an owner-operator that whole time. Now, as an employee, there are lots of years he might have had a refund coming. And now he will lose all of his refunds except the last 3 years. The last 3 years, if he had a refund coming, we can still get it for him. Anything prior to that, if he had a refund, he lost it. But if he owes taxes, obviously he still has to pay those. So I had an owner-operator. So you know there's never a refund for them. The best we could hope to do in any given year was get his tax to zero. And I had to go back and file all 15 years. We got his total tax bill down. Here's the other thing. This was my approach to this, and I explained it to the client. I said, look, I'm not going to cheat, but I am going to file the most aggressive tax return I have ever filed. We're going to deduct everything I think I could possibly come up with. And my logic was, how much more trouble could you be in? I mean, if they decide to, you know, implement all the penalties and all the interest they could for these years, they're just going to wipe you out anyway. So why not file a really aggressive tax return, get it as low as we can. If they audit it and they don't allow something, so what? You know, it's not going to matter at this point. So we got his total tax bill down to like $23,000 or $24,000 for that whole time. We got him to waive a lot of the penalties and interest. So they didn't accept an offer in compromise. He had to go on a payment plan and he had to pay it all back. But we got him caught up. So the first step is you have to file those tax returns. But the way that I would do this is you don't want to file one tax return at a time. I mean, right now, if the IRS isn't beating on his door, we don't want them to start. And if you file the oldest tax return, they are immediately going to start collections. So what we want to do is sit down and get all of the tax work caught up. Now, if the IRS is knocking on his door, or if they are bothering him, then that has to be addressed. And his best bet is to work with either, I really prefer what's called an EA, an enrolled agent. Everybody thinks CPA, and CPAs are fine, but EAs really specialize in tax work. And they're easy to find. Look for an enrolled agent anywhere in your local area. They're not hard to find at all. And he needs to sit down with them. If the IRS is sending him notices, they have to be addressed immediately. If they're not, I would recommend you get all the tax returns done and then file them all at once and make contact with the IRS at that point. The worst thing he can do is just keep ignoring it. You have to address it. Ed, go ahead.
How would he even go about getting the what is the little thing they send you at the beginning of the year, the employer sends you?
The W-2?
Yeah, how would he even go about getting all that, you know?
So one of the things, we do have to make some contact with the IRS. If he doesn't have his records, we request the transcripts from the IRS. So the IRS is going to send you transcripts once you, and again, this is where the EA comes in. The EA knows how to request these things. The IRS is going to send you all of the information they have about income, wages, interest, anything that got reported to them. If it didn't get reported to them, then the odds of him remembering it, we just ignore it. I mean, if the IRS says this is the money we know you got, that's what we're going to file the tax return on. As far as expenses, you know, if he was a driver in a given year, the way I did this was I would just guess at the number of overnights. The other expenses, you can try to make some things up that sound reasonable. And if the IRS wants to audit any given year, we just say, look, you know, he's moved around, the records are lost, this was our best guess. When I did the 15 years, they never questioned a single year. They didn't want to, I think they were just happy that he did it all and got caught up.
All right. Now, the him being a company driver and all that, do you think there's a slim chance, even the slimmest of slim, that he might break even? Because at this point, he's probably biting his fingernails, chewing them clean off.
You know, it's absolutely possible. He's looking at like 14 years of returns. It's completely possible that if we did all 14 returns, he might get a refund. I mean, there's just no way of knowing. It would depend on how he was withholding. And again, if the first 11 years, if he had refunds, we're not going to be able to get them. But if he had refunds every one of those years, then after 11 years, we'd be at zero. And if he had refunds in his last 3 years, we could get those back. So this could be anywhere from he owes them $20,000 to they owe him $5,000. Who knows?
All right. Can I contact the tax service you offer off the air and get some of this squared away, or is this completely up to that EA? All right.
No,
well,
we have CPAs and EAs, and they'd be able to handle this.
All right, and that's on that 855-800-FUEL number?
Yep.
All right. Well, I will give them a call.
All right. Well, thanks for helping him out. Just let him know. Just get it over with. The IRS isn't going to go away. They have all the power on their side. They have all the time on their side. But the minute you engage with them, if you ignore them, things get worse. If you engage with them, then they're really not that bad to work with at all. Let's see. Let's head off to San Antonio. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
I got an oil sample I want you to go over quick because I changed the gel back to the shape for school today and have noticed that my potassium went way high. I don't know why. I'm kind of worried about it.
Okay, so we've got 732,000 miles on the engine and about 72,000 miles on the oil. Is that correct?
The lube time, that's not right. I don't know where they got that number from. I'm trying to look back at my notes, trying to figure out.
Okay. And while you're doing that, what year ISX is this?
2007.
Okay. So while you're looking for that, I'll kind of go over what we've got. Fuel dilution looks good, no soot. So this is a pretty clean burning ISX. That's a good sign. Viscosity is just about perfect. We had been really high on viscosity. So that's cleaned up. Wear metals all look excellent. There is a concern here with potassium. And we're starting to see a climb in sodium. Now, that potassium and sodium together, clear indication of coolant in the oil. It's not enough yet that you're probably even seeing any drop in coolant levels, but we're getting some coolant in the oil here. Now, it's really early. That's the beauty of doing oil analysis is we catch this stuff really early. But it's there, and coolant leaks only get worse over time. But what we want to do right now is just keep an eye on it. And if you can start to look for things, you know, the obvious stuff on this engine, it could be an EGR cooler, could be an oil cooler. If we get past those and we can't find it, then we're looking at more than likely a head gasket or a cracked head. But, again, we're really early. We're catching this really early. So keep an eye on it. I would start sampling a little earlier, maybe even every 15,000 miles, do a sample right now until we can identify where the coolant's coming from. So that's what you need to focus on right now. The rest of the sample looks great. But it does look like we're seeing the beginning of a coolant leak somewhere. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. It is that time of year. You do need to get your taxes and accounting taken care of, and we can help. We have a full-service tax and accounting program, and we have something that will fit everybody's needs, whether you're a driver, an owner-operator, a small fleet owner, a corporation, whether you want to do your own accounting, whether you want us to do it. We've got something for everybody. All you have to do is call or go to the website. There's a lot of information at letstruck.com, or you can give us a call at 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-REFIVE. Let's get back to some phone calls. Let's go to Atlanta. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Hey, we had talked
What's
last
on your
week
mind today?
Well, we had talked last week during the Cummins Power Hour. I had the 05 ISX and the Volvo 780 that was having the stuttering problem under cruise control. Well, I went yesterday to Cummins Power South in Atlanta. I got the overhead set like we talked about. Ended up having a code, it turns out, for the EGR exhaust differential pressure sensor. I guess it's also called the Delta P. And, they wanted to sit there and spend an hour or two diagnosing. I said, just go ahead and replace it because, you know, 10-year-old truck, it's going to probably need it anyway. So I went ahead and got that done. And with the overhead, man, it's like a brand-new truck now. Cold starts before, it would stumble and almost seem like it wanted to come out of the frame. And now it starts up. It sounds like a new DD15 or something. That's how smooth it is. So huge
Excellent.
Difference. And just another reason why I don't want to put any more money into this emissions truck because, a little sensor like that, you know, can have you stumbling around and, you know, another $300 of stupid tax for me buying this EGR truck along with the EGR cooler and EGR valve I did as preventive maintenance this past year. So, non-emissions trucks for me from now on for sure. But I went ahead
there
and got
go.
That taken care of. And I had a question for you. They had a cutaway of an N14 there in the shop. It was a beige N14. And I thought about you guys. They also had a poster in there saying that the legend lives. The the Recon N14 is still available from Cummins. And I want to get your opinion on what you feel about the Recon engines. I know they come with a longer warranty than a standard N-frame. And if it's worth the extra money for those.
You know, it can be. And, you know, my criteria on this, I had somebody call the other day and they had, and I think it was an N14, but it's kind of the same story on any engine. They had owned this engine for a very long time, and everything about this engine that they had was good. Like, it never broke down. It held an overhead for hundreds of thousands of miles. The oil samples were always excellent. Fuel economy was good, and nothing ever broke on this engine. That's an engine that I would never let go of that block. I would rebuild that block until I couldn't rebuild it anymore. On the other hand, if I had one that, you know, has already had two in frames or, you know, had some issues, then I might want to start with a whole new engine. That's pretty rare, though. So it really comes down to, you know, what I already have. If I'm building a glider and I have nothing, you know, buying a Recon like that is a great way to go. It's probably got the most thorough going through. The block should be in good shape. We shouldn't have any problems with, you know, getting the liner protrusion set right. So there are a lot of advantages to that level of engine. But if I have a good solid engine and I know all about it and its history, there's a good chance I'm not giving that one up.
Okay. Well, I had, like I said, I don't want to spend any more money on this truck. It's almost at $1.3 million and it's running good, but I found a couple of great trucks in the truck paper. There's one in particular, 2001 Volvo 660 with a N14 and a 10-speed. It's been overhauled, and I think I might go ahead and at the beginning of the year, so I can section 179 it for next year, I'll go ahead and probably pick it up in January and then have it at the company I'm leased to yard. And when this thing finally bites the bullet, just go ahead and switch over to that truck, perhaps having my mechanic in Memphis work on it. Yeah, because I know I'm not going to put any more money into this girl, so
right.
You know, run her out and then have that truck ready to go so I don't miss any of my runs on my dedicated route. And I also had questions about roo bars, as they're called in Australia, or grill guards. I've got a ProTec 3-inch grill guard on this truck. And I know you had talked about before on one of your previous programs about the bug deflectors on the front of the Volvos, and the Volvo engineers telling you how it disrupted the airflow and, you know, possibly cost you some miles per gallon. And I was just going to see what your thoughts were on these bull bars. You know, I drive where you see a lot of deer and a lot of wildlife. It already paid for itself. I put it on, and 3 days later, a big doe ran out in front of me on 57 South in Illinois, and I clobbered her at about 70 miles an hour. Now, this is when I was trying to get my Need for Speed out. Now I drive 55 everywhere, but I just was wondering your thoughts on those, and did you run those in the past?
No, I never have, but I have a pretty clear criteria that I use. You will lose fuel economy with a grill guard. There's no question about it. It disrupts airflow. What we've kind of worked out, and there's one unknown here. The one unknown is we don't know if and when we're going to hit an animal. So, but if we can kind of make some predictions, what I've come up with is if you are in an area where the odds are that you're going to hit an animal about once a year, and I know a lot of people who are in those areas and they've hit several, if you're going to hit something once a year, the grill guard is absolutely worth it. The loss in fuel economy, you'll make it up from, you know, not having the downtime and the damage and the deductibles and insurance and all that other stuff. But if you're only going to hit an animal or the odds are, you know, just random, might happen every couple of years here and there, then it's not worth losing all that fuel economy.
Okay, well, I know the biggest nightmare is to end up in what's called body shop hell, where you take it in and they're like, oh, we'll get to it in a couple of days, and then you call them 2 weeks later, they haven't even looked at it. So, you know, that was
right.
One of my main concerns for getting it, and I'm glad I did, but I feel like maybe with the new truck, I'll leave it off to maximize the aerodynamics, and since I'm driving that lower speed, it gives you such a much bigger time to react. You know, at 70, there is no chance of me reacting at all. And,
right.
You know, the aspect of it, staying out of the body shop was the main reason. But, I'm just trying to baby this truck now. And like I said, I'm going to go look at that other truck when I get a chance. And this one has been doing pretty good. But like I said, man, just little things like that, you know, that EGR sensor, you know, it's just another – part of my stupid tax, I call it, for buying the emissions truck. But I appreciate all your help,
buddy. I know. You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Carolina. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Can you hear me?
What can I help you with today? Yep.
Okay, Kevin. I've spoke with you a couple times. I've got a international with a ISX in it, and I built it. And, you know, you done the oil, you checked the oil sample, and I had a lot of oxidation with blow-by. Sure enough, about 100 miles later, I just had to rebuild it again. So I've got about $50,000 in this motor. So I've sold it.
Oh, okay.
I'm had enough, but I'm ready to go get away with it. My question is, my dream truck's always been a W9. Another one of them, and I know where two of them is. One with and one's a Detroit. I know they're not a good aerodynamic truck. It's just my dream truck, you know. That or T600. But they've been sitting for a while. What is your thoughts on them trucks that have been sitting a while, you know, 7 or 8 years?
You know, I really don't have a problem with them. And there was a time a long time ago that I wouldn't have wanted a truck that sat a long time, but Art, the materials they use to build these trucks have improved a lot. To give you an example, I bought a 99 Volvo, and I'll give you the quick history on it. It was bought new for a team operation in 99. From 99 to 2003, they had put like 700 and some thousand miles on it. From 2003 till I bought it in 2013, in almost 10 years, it had only had 60,000 miles put on. So it had sat a lot for a 10-year period, hardly ever getting used. And I went all over that truck, and I had very, very few problems. I mean, it is surprising how well they hold up. Now, obviously, tires, I won't run a tire that's more than 5 years old, so those go immediately. Rubber fuel lines, rubber coolant lines, all of those things get replaced. Belts. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't much I had to do to that truck at all, and it's been really solid. So I am not afraid of trucks that have been sitting. Let me get to a break. I'll come back, and we'll talk some more about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the final segment on this first hour. So at the end, I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up. We're going to do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Charles in North Carolina. So, Charles, I've bought a lot of trucks that have sat, and I've helped a lot of people do it, and we really just don't see a lot of problems.
Okay. Well, good. I mean, I know you're a fan of the Detroit, and that's what one of them has in it. It's a 97 model, if I'm not mistaken, and the other one's got the 34 6E. So I'm going to try to get the Detroit, you know. So, and that was just my question for you. You know, I was a little scared about it being sitting for so long, but I didn't know if I wanted to do that or spend the extra money and buy, you know, a truck that's been driven every day.
I kind of actually prefer the trucks that sat a long time because they just have less miles. Like I was able to find a 99 that only had less than 800,000 miles on it. I'd much rather get that than a 99 that has 1.4 million because it's been driven every day. So finding those trucks that got parked, that's kind of like a treasure for me because they usually tend to be lower mileage.
Okay. Yeah, and I know he's taken care of it. You know, he's just, when the fuel went up in 08, you know, he parked it and just went driving for our company and just let them sit, you know. So I've been trying for a year and a half to get him to sell them to me, and now he has. And now, like I said, I'm going to sell these newer mission trucks that I know you like so much. And
right.
You know. I've had my fair fun with one of these new mission trucks.
Yeah, it only takes one to cure you of the madness, and then you'll go back to engines that stay running the way they're supposed to and get good fuel economy all the time. So congratulations on finding one of those. And like I say, I just not afraid of trucks that have been sitting at all. We just don't see a lot of problems with them. Now, that doesn't mean that every truck that's been sitting is going to be the perfect truck. It might have been a problem truck to begin with. But even when we get problem pre-emission trucks, they're nothing like the headaches we see with the emissions. Let's go to Colorado. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Yeah, you got some profit gauges there sitting?
I do.
I got caught up on everything and put in the right spot, so see what they look like today.
Excellent. Okay, let's do that. So we are looking at, I imagine this is probably caught up January through November, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And I do have a lot of maintenance because I put a 13-speed in here and, you know, brakes and all kinds of stuff like that. So just upkeep, you know, updating.
Well, you know, let's talk about that because let's just jump right to the maintenance costs since you brought that up. A transmission, brakes, those are a couple pretty big items. And what year is this truck?
It's a 2000 Freightliner Classic.
Okay, so
I rebuilt the engine last year.
Okay, so I want to give people kind of a comparison here. If I look at like 08, 09, 010 trucks right now, and I'm looking at somebody's maintenance cost, it's not unusual for me to see maintenance cost in the 20 cent per mile range, just on normal stuff. Now, here's a much older truck. You put a transmission in it, which is a big ticket item, brakes, those kind of things, and your maintenance cost for the year was 18 cents. That's not bad at all on a truck that you're really doing some pretty major big ticket items on and some upgrades. So what I think can happen, and we see it all the time, is your goal should be to get your maintenance cost under 10. And that's totally doable with the pre-emission truck once you get some of those things caught up and, you know, you do some updating. So that's actually a good number with all the things that you've done. So then let's go back to the top and start with revenue. $1.39 a mile. Now, your mileage for the year is actually quite a bit under average and norm. You're at 86,000 miles, so my guess is you're going to be under 100 for the whole year. Is that, I would imagine that's your choice, or you're running miles?
I ran really hard the year before, and I decided that I wanted to go to Sturgis. I decided that, well, when I came back for the transmission, I only expected to be home for a week. I ended up home for 2 weeks because I just got home earlier than when my appointment was to do the transmission. Just different things.
Okay.
I came home for holidays normally don't come home for. So I'm changing it for next year. Next year, I'm going to run a little harder just to get some more money in the bank.
Yeah, it's nice when you have that option. That's one of the beauties of having the business, getting your numbers under control as you can make those choices. So $1.39 a mile, all miles. You've got 20 cents a mile in fixed cost, 61 cents a mile in variable. So we already went over maintenance at 18 cents. Fuel cost actually looks a little on the high side for this year, 41 cents a mile. What's your running fuel mileage on this truck right now?
6.86. What happened is I ended up getting a different dispatch. And it seems like my deadlines from where I start to where I, you know, deliver, I've been running into a lot of having to go faster than my 60 to 63 miles an hour. And then, I dropped off the trailer to have it DOT stickered, you know, and somebody stole the trailer, you know, from the company. Took the trailer that I was normally running, and then when I finally figured out where it went, I got it back. They had put two different tires on the trailer, which they're not. I don't know what the rolling resistance are on them, and all the other ones were a 87 for a rolling resistance.
Got it. Okay, so we go down to the bottom line, and you are keeping 58 cents a mile. Which is excellent. And the good news is we have two places where you could really make a difference. You know, 41 cents a mile, just to give you some of the best numbers we were seeing in 2015, we had people in the mid to high 20s. So we could easily say that there's an easy 5 cents to be made on fuel and a possible 10 cents. I mean, we might be able to get you down to 31 cents. Maintenance, we could knock 8 off there. So let's say we were just able to pick up 15 cents a mile. You'd be at 73 cents a mile, which would just be an outstanding number. This was a good year, and I think you're in a position now to have an even better year next year.
Yep. Oh, and also, here's my deal with the fuel. I had through the company I was running through, we lost all of our benefits as far as for our fuel. You know, I was paying whatever it said at the pump. Now I got a NASDAQ card, and I have big discounts and stuff just as of starting in August.
Excellent. So, yeah, that, like I say, this has been a good year. I mean, I like the numbers. You were able to take time off than you wanted to. And I think you're really, you've kind of used this year to put yourself in an even better position for next year.
And when I get my new trailer with the smooth sides, that should help too.
Yep, absolutely. So great stuff this year, and looks like you've set yourself up for an even better year. So congratulations.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. There is a great example of how the numbers are so important. It's so easy for me to look at somebody's business report when they have one. We have all those numbers in front of us. We can look at them. We can see what's working, what isn't working, what we should be planning for next year. We have a good idea of what's going on tax-wise. It really is the single most important thing you could do for your business right now, today, this week, no, just today, is if you don't have an accounting system in place, get one. Obviously, I'd love to have you use ours, but use anything that gets you a profit and loss statement, a business report, a tax report, whatever you need. You need to get it done. Not only will you pay a lot less tax, but more importantly, you're going to start running a business. And it's not that hard. People put this off because they don't know where to start. And if you know where to start, then just get started. If you don't know where to start, we have a program for everybody. Just call us, 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. There's the music. They're kicking me out of here, but I'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, building a fleet, hiring drivers, buying and selling trucks, you name it. We'll talk about it on this show. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call me. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. It's, you know, I sound like a nag, but the year is almost over. And you've got some things you've got to take care of. The good news is we have something to help you with all of it. You need to be getting ready for winter weather, and I can help you with that. I have a maintenance checklist that I've put together. It's something I used for all my trucks every quarter, but the most important quarter was the last one of the year, getting ready for wintertime. So it's a simple checklist, just walks you all the items on your truck you should be thinking about, what kind of testing or troubleshooting you might want to do. And we're making that list, that checklist, available as a free PDF that you can download. It's real easy to get. Go to our website, letstruck.com. Down on the bottom left, you'll see a sign up for our newsletters. Name, email, text message number, so we can text message if you want. Fill that out. and we will send you an email with that download. That's our thank you for being a loyal listener and tribe member. And then you will also get emails roughly about once a week with tax tips to help you get through this tax season, any updates on what's going on with per diem numbers and personal vehicle mileage deductions and what's going on with the Section 179 deduction, and lots of resources to help you. So check that out. Again, go to letstruck.com. Bottom left of the homepage, sign up for the newsletters, and we will send you some stuff that's going to help you a lot. CMC registration, you're going to be hearing a lot more about this in January, but I'll give you a head start on this now. CMC 2016 is happening May 16th, 20th, so even though it's 2016, it's not that far away. We are really kind of getting close to the CMC, and it's time to make your plans. We have about 300 people registered for the event now. We have room for 500. We had talked maybe about expanding that number, but we're going to hold it at 500 this year. The last several years, we've been sold out, so this is your opportunity. This is the first year in a while we've had space available. We moved it to a bigger venue. We're going to be in Council Bluffs, Iowa. We're taking over the entire Mid-America Center, so we have the show floor, we have the meeting rooms, we have a full stadium, we have the whole parking lot. Nobody else is at the facility all week, so it's just us. We are doing three different lanes this year. I'm really excited about this. This is the biggest thing to happen to the CMC since we started the CMC 10 years ago. The program's been growing like crazy, but this is by far the biggest thing we've done. Here's what we're doing. We are running three different lanes this year. So for the last 10 years, everybody who was at the CMC went through the same classes, the same meeting, same seminar. Now we have three different seminars going on that really allow you to pick and choose what you want to learn. For the most part, the CMC has been targeted to somebody who already owns a truck and they're leased to a carrier. We're certainly still doing all of that. But this year, we're also adding some really specialized classes for people who don't own a truck yet, but they've either thought about becoming an owner-operator and they want to explore that more, or they absolutely know they want to be an owner-operator and they want to do it right. You will be able to have an entire week, and I'm going to be teaching most of that program, and I'm excited. I love helping people get started. So we're going to have an entire week of walking you through every step. If you've ever thought about becoming an owner-operator, you absolutely need to be here for this program. There is no better way. I can virtually guarantee your success as an owner-operator if you come through this program and even do half of what we're going to teach you. The other lane that we've added is for people who either have their own authority or interested in getting it. And your whole week will be focused around those subjects. So three different lanes, getting started. You're already an owner-operator leased to a carrier. You want to make as much money as you possibly can. Or you either want to get your own authority or you have your own authority. Your week is going to be tailored. Plus, we have lots of breakout sessions on other topics. We're going to have a big focus on health this year if you want to go through those classes, but you get to pick and choose. We're going to bring back all of our great speakers, Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh, Kid from MD Alignment, six-time best-selling author and one of the top speakers in the world right now, Larry Winget, is joining us again. He has become a regular, and Larry loves doing this event, so that's always exciting. George Gallimore coming back to do sales and negotiation training. George also spends the week doing one-on-one with people who want to learn even more about maybe going out and selling or negotiating with brokers, selling or negotiating with direct shippers, buying and selling equipment. Not only will George be there teaching that to everybody, but he offers some one-on-ones and some additional breakout seminars in the evenings. Lots of stuff going on. Bruce Mallinson and Pittsburgh Power will be building a signature engine throughout the whole week, so you're going to get to watch that as well. Way too much for me to talk about here. You just need to get signed up. We have a payment plan, so it only takes about $100, and you'll be in. So if you go to the website, letstruck.com, look under the events tab, or if you have any questions, just call us. We'll help you out with it. We'll get you signed up again. It takes about $100 to get your seat reserved, and then you can pay monthly, and we'll get you in there and get you taken care of. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. Let's get to some phone calls. We're going to start off in Missouri. Al, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks. Say, I've come across a truck I'm interested in buying. It's a 2003 Volvo 780 with a 600 ISX and a 13-speed.
Okay. So, 03, and we verified that it's not an EGR engine, correct?
Well, I've got the serial number of the motor. The truck was built, I think, March or April of 03.
Pretty good chance. I just like to be absolutely sure. So, you could call a common shop and have them run the serial number. They'd be able to tell you. You could ask the dealer just – go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm buying it from an individual at a hell of a price, I believe.
So,
and he said that he rebuilt it about 1,000,000 miles, and he claims it to be a non-EGR.
Okay. And that's fine. When it's 03, 04, I always just like to make sure because that was the transition year. This isn't my favorite engine, but it's certainly not my worst. I'll tell you where I would put this in the order, and this is just my personal preference. There's nothing wrong with that engine. I just didn't see them get really good fuel economy. They didn't have any major maintenance issues. The ISX for me is a little more complicated than it really needs to be, in my opinion. But if I were to rate the engines that I, you know, what I would look for, obviously, the Detroit that I've used for years, the Series 60 pre-emission. Depending on the operation, one of my next two choices would be N14 or 6NZ Cat. The 600 ISX, I would probably have to put at number four. It doesn't mean I wouldn't own one, but it certainly wouldn't be in my top choices. But again, that's just my personal preference because of fuel economy. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to Al in Missouri. So Alice, if you really like the truck and you know you like the rest of the specs on it, which are just fine, and this is an engine that you like. Again, there's not a real problem with this engine. It's not in my top three, but I could probably call it number four.
All right. Now, what he's done, he told me, is he rebuilt it at about 1,000,000 miles, and it's got about 1,235 on it now. Since it hasn't run much in the last year or so, but when it idles for a long time, he says when you get going afterward, it looks like you're burning coal.
You know, if he has some miles on the oil, I would pull an oil sample. My guess is you're going to find some fuel dilution. We've probably got an injector that's streaming fuel while it idles, which, you know, isn't the end of the world, but we'd like to know that before we bought it. So if he has some miles on the oil, see if you can pull an oil sample. But that's my guess, that we've got an injector that's streaming a lot of fuel while it's idling.
Okay. Well, good.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Texas. Carl, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mr. Rutherford?
Good. What can I help you with today?
I have a question. I have a 2016 Freightliner Cascadia with a Cummins in it, ISX. And I just want to know your thoughts on just the 2016 models. Worst problem I've had so far at 62,000 miles is the ECM was out of date, from what the dealership told me, by 7 updates. And once it was updated, the truck, you know, performed pretty good after that. I would have a problem with the EGR system. I mean, not the EGR, I'm sorry. The
DPF.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And
that's
wasn't
really common. That's really common when the updates haven't been done to have those DPF problems. So usually the updates take care of it for now. Let me ask you a question before I get too deep into my opinion on this. Is this a truck you purchased and your name is on the title, or is it a lease purchase?
It's actually a lease purchase right now.
Which is better right now. If you had bought this truck, I'd you know, be saying I'm sorry, but it's a lease purchase. You don't have a tremendous amount of risk here. What I would do if I were you, if you don't have a good accounting system, get one. Because here's the real measure of whether or not you should stay in a lease purchase. It really comes down to how much money you get to keep. It isn't about building equity in that truck or ever owning that truck. Because I have to tell you, the odds are you are never going to own this truck. Some people do, but the odds are not on your side. The company could cancel the lease at any time. There's just so many things that could happen. So the real measure is, can you make more money leasing this truck than you can if you were just driving somebody else's? And the only way to know that is to have a good accounting system and watch it every month. You know, if this thing starts to become a maintenance problem like most of these trucks do, it could wipe out a lot of your profit, and you end up taking more risk and making less money. And that's my only criteria. I don't like these programs,
right,
but if somebody's in one and they're making 50 cents a mile after all their expenses, well, then stay in it. Why wouldn't you at that point? But I just did somebody again the other day that was making 18 cents a mile, and they didn't know it. So, you know, as soon as they saw the numbers, they decided to get out of it and go back to driving for somebody for 38 or 40 cents a mile and save their money and buy a truck. The best thing I can tell you about my opinion about 2016s, I can sum it up in one sentence. I would never own one. I wouldn't own anything after 2004. I just wouldn't. I don't want these engines. I've had one, and I don't want to own another one, and I've sat here on the phone and talked to thousands of people who wish they didn't have one.
Right. Okay. Another question about the same truck.
Okay.
I just replaced the steer tires right on the front, okay? And the reason why
Okay, go ahead. Tell me why.
What happened was, since I've had the truck, it never changes tune. It's just a constant rattle that you could feel under your feet on both sides if you're in the driver's seat or the passenger seat, right? So
okay.
I problemed myself and took it back to the dealership under warranty. It was fixed. The steering linkage from basically the inside of the truck where it tilts, where the steering wheel tilts, down to the steering box, it was one of the U-joints were bad, so they had to replace all of that, right? Now, that once that was replaced, that rattling was completely gone for about 2 weeks, and it just recently came back a few days ago. Now, when I noticed the rattling coming back, I noticed the driver's side tire was wearing on the inside, completely evenly wear around the inside of the tire. So I replaced the two steer tires. Okay, now the rattling is still there, but this mechanic that I took it to, I wanted the front end check. I just basically said, hey, look, just check the front end for me, make sure all the bolts are tight. He couldn't find anything wrong, and kingpins were fine and everything. But he noticed that the engine, the top of the engine, he felt was making too much noise, like telling me that it could be that. Now, it holds fine oil pressure. Fuel mileage averages anywhere from 7.5 to 8 to, you know.
Hold on.
The
odds of you feeling a top-end engine problem in your feet, pretty rare. I mean, that would have to be a really extreme. One of the things we don't want to do is go looking for something that isn't there. We want to look for the more obvious answers. It's not impossible for an engine to create that kind of feeling, but it's pretty rare. We do know that you have some front-end issues. So let's separate these two and work on them individually. And that inside smooth tire wear, my guess is the wheel bearing is out of adjustment. Very, very common. Brand-new trucks, they're about 80% of the trucks on the road today have improper wheel bearing adjustment. It's that bad. So let's look at the obvious sign first and get that wheel bearing adjusted. But at the same time, we need to get a really good alignment done on this truck. And when I say really good, I only mean one system, MD alignment. I don't trust anybody else to my alignments. If you can get to Kansas City, we have a specific MD alignment shop there we like, Chad.
Okay.
Alignment Solutions is the name of the company. Because here's what happens. When they build that truck, they have, I forget the number, it's like 7 minutes to align that truck when it's coming down the assembly line. It's not very long at all. I might have the number wrong, but what it really means is they don't have enough time to do a really great alignment on it. So there's a good chance it comes out of the factory and it's not even in alignment on day one. Even if it is in alignment on day one, it needs to be rechecked and realigned at about 30,000 miles. You're at 60. We already have tire wear, so we have a bounce. So we know this thing has some tire and alignment issues. My absolute number one recommendation is get it to Chad. He'll take care of your alignment problems. That's the alignment issue. We can come back to that in a second if you have questions. The rattling and the noise in the top end, more than likely the overhead needs set. And that's a pretty common thing on a new engine as well. So get the overhead set. That should take care of the noise on the top end.
Okay, now, but it was still, like he was mentioning, that it's possible not getting enough oil to the top of the engine. And what do you think about that? Do you think it's just, I mean, because the oil pressure stays around between 40 and 50.
That's an odd thing to say. Did he have some explanation as to why it's not getting enough oil?
No, honestly, he didn't. Come think about it, since you asked me that question, no, he did not.
Well,
he did not have
I mean, what a crazy... Let's think about that for a second.
Okay.
If he truly believes that the top end is not getting enough oil and it's making that much noise, if that were true, you could wipe out the top end of that engine in about 20,000 miles or less. And for him to say, oh, that noise is probably the top end not getting enough oil, and then just send you on your way, that's insane. First off, I think he's wrong. But if he were right, he should have never let the truck out of the shop till they figured out why. I mean, if we don't have enough oil getting to the top and it's so bad it's making noise, we're literally going to wear things out in no time. So that just sounds, I don't even know what to say. I'm going to get to a break, and by the time we get back, I will know what to say. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Talking with Carl in Texas. So, Carl, here's the thing. Was this a Volvo dealer or a Cummins shop?
Actually, it was the petrol, actually. So,
now I'm really not surprised. That was horrible advice. If I get a truck that comes in, it's got 60-some thousand miles on it, new, and the top end is making noise, the first thing I'm going to recommend is let's set the overhead. Now, if we're in there setting the overhead and we really believe that this engine's not getting enough oil, which is just an odd thing to think, we would see evidence of that while we were in there and we'd be able to address that problem. But to tell somebody it's not getting enough oil and then not give them a reason or something to do, what I would recommend, get it to a Cummins shop, or better yet, get it to Pittsburgh Power. Let them get into the overhead, look at the top, set it, make sure nothing's going wrong in there. I don't think there is anything going wrong. I just think the overhead needs set.
Okay, because, you know, it has 62,000 miles on it, and believe it or not, when he told me that, I find that a little odd. 62,000 miles, if it wasn't getting enough oil to the top of the engine like that, it seemed like something else would have been going on besides just making noise, you know.
Yeah, well, and that would be such a bad thing, you know.
Right. Now, another thing, what I pull, I hardly ever go over 15,000 pounds in the trailer. That's about it.
Okay.
My line of work is all light material, all constant, okay? And the tires wearing like that, I found that strange. Now, I did take it to a shop about a month ago and had the three-axle alignment checked. Now, they couldn't find anything out of the ordinary that was wrong.
That means nothing. That's why I was very, very specific in where I wanted you to go. I could send you to 10 alignment shops. They'll come back with 10 different answers, and then we'll go to Chad, you know, to use an example, and Chad will find the right answer. I could go through an hour of why most alignment shops are not this right, but rather than do that, I'll just tell you where you can go to get it right. I am not surprised. No matter how new a truck is, how light your freight is, none of that really matters. If the alignment is wrong, if the balance is wrong, or if the wheel bearings are loose, you could run around empty and we could wear tires out in 30,000 miles. If those things are wrong, it doesn't take long to wear out a tire. If you get all those things right, we can make steer tires last now for 250,000 miles. So get to Chad and get this done. Let's go to Ontario. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello, Kevin.
Hello there.
I'm from Canada, and like down here, you guys got a great show and a great resource, but I'm looking for something maybe one of your listeners might know, a resource north of the border, because I got so many questions to deal with crossing, you know, not just specifically crossing the border, but things to do with, you know, just running back and forth that I'd overwhelm the show so fast. So I was hoping maybe, I don't know if you would know or somebody would have a resource.
I'm not exactly sure what you're looking for. Just are just specifically questions about running in both countries or getting started? Are you an owner-operator now?
I'm a company driver. But, I mean, little things being a company driver have been driving me crazy, and I'm putting money aside to buy a truck. But I wouldn't even know, like, how to get it on with a carrier or anything. And
okay.
Just so many simple questions is just driving me crazy. I was hoping somebody might know of, you know, some kind of internet site or whatever. I've looked on Google and all over, and I haven't been able to find anything
yeah.
or anything like that.
Well, and that is exactly what you're going to find. If you try to look up each individual question, you're going to make yourself crazy, because if you start Googling stuff, you're going to get things that come off of forums where individuals are just posting things, and there's never any way to know whether they're right or not. Many times they aren't. There aren't many resources where you could go one place and get your questions answered. But
yeah,
we could also,
or even to try and find some kind of forum is next to impossible. Like, I've been finding nothing.
Yeah.
I'm scratching my head going crazy. I mean, I know it's
so
a lot going on, so somebody's got to get their information somewhere.
Well, most people get it through trial and error and making mistakes and asking questions, getting the wrong answer many times. So there isn't one resource, I can tell you that. You've got to just dig. Or one of the things we could do is separate the issues here. What I mean by that is you had some questions that are more compliance kind of questions. You know, crossing the border, what can you do once you're down here? I wouldn't get too crazy about those. Those aren't that big of a deal. I think
right.
your much more important issue is how do you get started as an owner-operator and do it right? And the good news is, there is nothing different about doing this in Canada or the U.S. Or the differences are just minor. They are more compliance than anything else, and compliance is the easiest thing to go get an answer to. There's lots of places we could go do that once you had a specific question, but the question about how do you get started as an owner-operator and get started right is the same north or south of the border. The good news is that is my big push for 2016. I have a free ebook that's going to be coming out in a couple weeks that gives you the top 6 mistakes to avoid, and I'm going to give that book away free. I'm also going to record it on audio, so you're going to get the ebook to read and an audio to listen to free. And like I say, I'm within a couple weeks of releasing that. I have the full-blown program that has hours of audio that you can listen to while you drive. It has video that you can watch. It has a workbook to walk you through every step of getting started. That program is $247. It's available right now. And then we have the CMC coming up this year, which we have a lot of people coming from Canada already, and we do every year. And I'm going to teach an entire week of how to get started. So what we've created is like this 1-2-3 to get started as an owner-operator. Start with the free ebook so you avoid all the mistakes. Buy the audio-video workbook program so you know what to do step-by-step. And attend the CMC, and I will spend a week with you, and we will personally build your plan and make sure you know what to do every step of the way.
Okay. All right, well,
so
thank you very much, Kevin.
That I can tell you that there is no other resource available anywhere on the planet like that. this really is the easy as 1, 2, 3. You follow these 3 steps, and I guarantee you will succeed as an owner-operator, and you will make more money than most people who have owned trucks for 10 years. You're going to make more money in your first year if you do this. So there really isn't any other resource like that that I know of. To Tennessee, John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Kevin, how are you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Yeah, I'm looking at an 05 T600. Now, it's got a C15 cat that he claims they rebuilt. It's got 1.4 million. He claims they, you know, it's got 200,000 on the rebuild, and he's claiming that they converted it back to 6NZ. I didn't think that was possible with an Acert engine.
It is. It is a. It's a very extensive process if it is done correctly. Now, when somebody tells me, we can't always believe this, but if I were to say we took an Acert and we converted it to a 6NZ, to me that is the full-blown top to bottom, you know, but there are lots of things in between. I've seen some people where all they do is change some of the programming and they claim it's a 6NZ. There's really extensive work that has to be done in order to accomplish that, but it can be done. If we take a C15 just sitting there and we want to do the conversion, it's about $12,000. Now, if we do it during an in-frame, it doesn't cost nearly as much because we're doing all the same labor. Now, the whole in-frame and converting it costs more. But the conversion part as part of an in-frame doesn't cost as much because we're doing most of the labor already and we're replacing some of those parts. So I'm going to get to a break. I'll come back and I'll clarify that for you. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with John in Tennessee. So, John, if they have done a true conversion, and that's the first thing I would want to verify, and it's not easy to do. You literally need to see the engine. The problem with the CAT, which was Acert instead of EGR, EGR is all external. So it's a little easier for us to inspect an EGR engine and see what's been done to it. What's happening on the Acert, we are recirculating the exhaust, but it doesn't happen externally. It happens internally with the valves. So it's almost impossible to look at an Acert and know what they've done to it. So it's a little tricky. If it's been done right, it is a huge improvement on that engine. That would be the good side. If we could prove it's done completely and it's done right, you should have a very good performing engine. The other thing you need to be aware of, though, is that's illegal. And run into a problem somewhere down the line. It doesn't seem to be a big issue right now, but it's just something you should be aware of.
All right. Now, is there something on the motor that I would have to take that shot to verify that it's been?
Yeah.
I'd take somebody Pittsburgh Power or something to get it verified it's been converted.
That's exactly what I would do. In fact, that would be the only, if I were thinking about buying this truck, the only shop I would trust to verify that would be Pittsburgh Power. They can go through and tell you what's been done on the engine, what's been done in the ECM. They could tell you all that stuff.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It's, you know, it's the only reason I was looking to buy it is because, you know, I've got a 2005 now that's EGR on a 60 series Big X 5.
Right.
But anyway, the thing's got a 144-inch sleeper, and I only want $35,000 for it.
You know, like I
said,
yeah, if you can verify that this has been done right, then you've got a great engine. There's no question. We've seen these done, and when they are done right, that engine picks up a full mile per gallon, and performance is outstanding. It's just a real question of how much has been done, and was it done right? And the only shop I would trust with that would be Pittsburgh Power. Let's go to Mike in Indiana. It's your turn. Welcome to the program.
I was looking at buying some new drive tires in the Michelin line, and I was looking on about the rolling resistance. I was considering the X-Fine
right.
Energy D tires, but I wonder if I want to go to the XDN2 to get extra traction, and I was curious on how to know how much difference that is in fuel economy.
Well, I can tell you the difference in fuel economy. We're going from 140 on the XDN to 109 on the X-Line, so you're going to lose a solid 3/10 of a mile per gallon. And honestly, you're not going to find many situations where you're going to be able to tell a true difference in traction. There isn't one time somewhere where the XDN might have gotten you out of a problem, but the odds are pretty slim. That X-Line Energy D has excellent traction, great wear, and good fuel economy. So you would never get me to buy the XDN over the X-Line, no matter how far north I drove.
So it wouldn't be a significant traction difference with the open shoulder?
The open shoulder, the only real advantage you see with an open shoulder is off-road or really deep snow. That's about the only time you see any big difference. What I would much, so for me, what I would do is I'd have the Energy D, and I would have a set of auto socks. That's the fabric chain replacement. They're really easy to carry. They're light. They're easy to put on. And if I ever got somewhere where I got stuck, I'd throw those on, and you'll zip right out.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for information.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to John in Minnesota. It's your turn. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. Paratax now. The batteries that I have, I've actually, with this set of four batteries, I've actually boiled two of them. I'm wondering if you have any idea what could be causing that.
There are a couple things that could do it, but they're all fairly easy to check. What kind of batteries are these?
The standard lead acid batteries for semi.
Okay. So one of the first things we want to do when we have electrical issues is just do some really good electrical system maintenance. I do that first because if you take this into a shop, they're going to look at the two batteries that are boiling. They're going to say they're bad, and they're either going to try to sell you two batteries or four batteries. And that may or may not work. It could have been two bad batteries. But there's also a good chance that we have an electrical system issue that caused it. And if we just throw a couple batteries in there, we're not going to know it until we boil two more. So that checklist that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that maintenance checklist, which you can download for free, will cover all these steps that I'd like to do in an electrical system troubleshooting. So we start at the batteries, pull off all the connections, clean up all the posts and the connectors, replace any bad connectors, get get them back together, clean and tight, dielectric grease everything. And then we start working out from the batteries to the ECM. We check all our connections there. We take all of our grounds apart. We don't just look at them. We take them apart, regrind them, clean them up, put new ends on the grounds if we need to, get those re- and then we test the electrical system. And we can test it for any draw. When all everything's turned off, we check to see if there's any draw. Because if you have a little bit of a draw on the system, that would mean that every time you turn the truck off, the batteries start draining, and then every time you start it, they recharge. And you do that over and over and over, and you will wipe out a lead-acid battery. Doesn't even have to be a big draw. So we want to make sure that there isn't some sort of a draw there that shouldn't be there. Then we can load test the batteries. Two of them are probably going to fail. We also need to test the alternator without the batteries on it. So we test pure voltage coming out of the alternator, and we want to be between 13.8 and 14.2. That is the ideal range. If you're at 14.5, you're not going to notice any big problem, but you will kill the life of those batteries. If you're at 13.4, same thing. The truck's going to start every day. It's going to charge all the time, but you're going to really decrease the life of the battery. Once we make sure everything's functioning properly, then my recommendation would be to replace all four batteries. You get one okay. bad battery, and there's even one bad cell in one battery, and it puts a huge strain on the rest of the battery. So when you see one start to boil and you replace it, the odds are you're going to see another one start. And you'll replace that, and then you're going to see another one. And then now you're already starting to put too much of a load on the couple you already replaced. So I like to get the electrical system right and then replace all four batteries. Depending on your budget, if I could just wave a magic wand and give you the best system possible, I would replace your four batteries with one Maxwell engine start module and three glass mat batteries or good deep cycle batteries. I really like the Optimas. And you could do the Optima Blue Top if you have the Maxwell. The Optima Blue okay. Top is ideal for hotel loads. Like you turn the key off, you're going to run inverters and all this other stuff. And we don't care about the cold cranking amps anymore because the Maxwell has twice as many cold cranking amps as a battery. So that would be the ideal. If you wanted the perfect electrical system fix, you do all those steps that I have on the checklist. Once you're done, put a Maxwell in for starting, three good Optima batteries for your hotel loads, and you will have the best electrical system you've ever had on that truck.
Okay. With the speed sensor issue I hear a lot of people having with their trucks, I've had
yeah.
that issue, and I replaced the speed sensor, but I still had the issue, so I went to my dealer, and I actually got a pigtail end that clipped into the wiring harness. You just clip it, crimp it, and shrink it, and clip it in there, and that actually seemed to fix my issue a couple times because of the over a million miles, those connectors wear out.
Ah, got it. All right, wish I had more time to cover that, but I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us, and we will see you back here tomorrow.